I wanted to know a little bit more about who all is in the audience, and I wanted to know who all in here has boys. Raise your hand. Oh, lots of mamas of boys. Okay, I want to know who has the most boys. Who has three boys? Okay, leave your hands up. Who has four? So we have two that have three? Two boys? Two boys? How many? Three? Okay. Who has three boys? You get chocolate. You can go chocolate. Okay, who has girls? Lots of girls, too. How many? Let's see. Let's start with three girls. Who has three? Shannon, okay, I know you have three girls. Anybody have four girls? Okay, you get two chocolate bars. I wanted to start off by making a little confession. I am no great mother. I know this. I have to recall a certain event that happened when Jacob, my middle son, was in the fourth grade. A little bit of background. This was, 10 or 12 years ago. My husband was on the school board in Dripping Springs. The church building at the time was right there, if any of you have been through Dripping Springs, right there on Highway 290, right across the street from the administration building, and then right behind that was the school building that he attended. And he had been having trouble. He would walk from the school to the church building where my husband would take him home after that, every day after school. And he'd been having a little bit of trouble with a bully. Since he had to walk, he had to wait for all the other people to go by. He had to wait for the buses to leave. So he was almost by himself at the school by the time he was allowed to leave. And so a couple of little boys that lived close to the administration building would wait. And they'd wait for him to walk by, and they'd start tossing rocks at him and being mean to him. And just when someone hurts your child, it just breaks your heart, doesn't it? And you just want to, you have to, send Mama Bear back to the cave. Well, John was out of town in a gospel meeting, and Jacob was crying about this one day. I said, I remember this Andy Griffith episode where Opie was having trouble with a little boy named Sheldon. And he was leaving, walking to school in the morning, and Sheldon would demand his nickel for his milk. And he would give him a knuckle sandwich if he didn't give him his nickel for his milk. And so Opie would show up with a black eye, and he would say, what is wrong with what's going on? So finally the story comes out, and Andy, anyway, make a long story short, Andy says, you got to stick up for yourself. And you got to just punch him. So I'm thinking, if it worked for Andy Griffith, maybe it'll work for Jacob. So I said, Jake, you may just have to stand up for yourself. You may just have to whack him. So not a really good thing for me to tell him, but I just thought, he's got to learn to stand up for himself. So one day on his way back from the school building, passing by the administration building, here comes J.W., the boy, tossing rocks at him. And Jacob stood as long as he could, and then he decided, I'm not going to take any more. And he reached around and whacked the back of his head. Now, the way Jacob described it, he just kind of went, but the way the other little boy described it was not quite that gentle. Well, what happened is just the exact moment that the superintendent walked out of the administration building, saw the whole thing. Now, remember, John's on the school board. This is the superintendent. She knows Jacob. She also knows J.W. Well, the next day, he got called into the principal's office, which I'm proud to say is the only time any of the three of my boys have ever been called into the principal's office. And they had a little talk. And I got a call. And I was in tears because I had given him dumb advice. And because John was gone, and he didn't have to deal with any of the fallout, it was all by myself. But I learned valuable lessons. Of course, obviously, violence doesn't solve anything. I don't think Jacob was violent, but it would have been a better way to handle it, to do it some other way. But in the long run, Jacob and J.W. ended up being friends. The superintendent, the principal, they knew Jacob. They knew his reputation. They knew J.W.'s reputation. So they knew what was going on in the background. And the superintendent did see what J.W. was doing to Jacob. But I just want to throw that out there so that I'm not portraying myself to be any kind of a fantastic mother, because I've done some dumb things myself. But I was thinking about the topic of this lesson, training a prince. And that implies that their father is a king, and their father is a king. God is their father. But you also hope that they have an earthly king for a father in choosing a king for your father. Think about Prince William. We've seen a lot about him in the news, And we've all watched him grow from a little tiny baby with Princess Diana, and how you could see the training that he went through, and how she was very careful to teach him to be kind and to look respectfully at adults. There was a lot that went into training that prince to become the future king of England. Now, why do we train our sons? Proverbs 29:15 tells us that a child left himself will bring a mother's shame, and I hopefully will not be brought to shame by my children. And why do we train? What is our desire? Our desire for our sons is to grow up to be happy and healthy, and not just happy and healthy here in this life, but in the next life as well. Imagine how much better this world would be if it were filled with men who were honest and faithful and had integrity. This is our job. We're to be raising men to fill those needed roles of someone with integrity. It's our responsibility to train. Psalm 127:3 says that children are heritage from the Lord. We've heard that verse many, many times. If you want to turn and look at Deuteronomy 6, I know you've read this as well, but I always think it's well worth reading. Deuteronomy 6, verses 1 through 9. These are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land whither you go to possess it, that you might fear the Lord thy God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command thee, thou and thy son and thy son's son, all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. Hear, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee. And then skipping down to verse 7, thou shalt teach them diligently to thy children, and talk of them when thou sittest in mine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. All day long, every day, 24/7, we'll be talking to God about God to our children. And he tells us why in verses 24-25, the Lord has commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is at this day. So there's our reason, because God loves us and he's wanting to provide for us and protect us. That's our reason for training our sons. Ephesians 6:4, of course, tells fathers that they're not to provoke their children to anger, but to bring them up in the measure and admonition of the Lord. And then Titus 2:4 says that we're to train the young women to love their husbands and children. It's something that we're to be trained to do. It may not come as naturally for a lot of us. If we don't train, what's going to happen? Proverbs 10:1 says that a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Proverbs 13:1 says that a wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Proverbs 29:15, the Proverbs are full of good information about child rearing. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and the priest gives wisdom, but a child left himself does what? Brings his mother to shame, doesn't it? So, tell me, I don't run, but some of you who do, how do you prepare for a marathon? I like to have a little bit of audience participation. How do you prepare? You train. How do you train? Practice. You run. Yeah, you do what you're training for. Build up. You start slow, build up to it. Anything else? What about your diet? Mm-hmm. You have a good diet. You have the right gear. You might have to buy a pair of shoes that works well for running. What about a goal? You have a goal in mind? You've got to have a goal. You've got to have a plan. All of these things apply to raising children as well. You need a goal. You need the proper gear, which is your Bible and your Christian fellowship. You need to practice. You need to do it diligently and make sure that you have a good plan in mind. This is how we train our children. I wanted to throw this out there, too. This is a sad fact. But if you have good kids, it seems to be that they're out there and people are waiting to see them do wrong. They're waiting to be knocked down. This is sad. It's hurtful. Because no child, no son is perfect. No parent is perfect. But when you have some that have a reputation to be good kids, it's a sad fact that some of them are just waiting to see if they're doing something wrong. They're looking. They're scrutinizing. You know, in some cases, it's a good idea for us to think about if these things are true. If someone says something about our son, is it true? We need to be honest with ourselves. But Proverbs 20:11 says, even a child makes himself known by his acts, by whether his conduct is pure and upright. So your son will have a reputation, and hopefully it's a good one, and if it is a good one, his reputation will bear out that he is a good boy. That sounds funny to say, but he's a good boy. But if you are one of those that is harsh in your judgment of other people's children, or your own children, or people in general, you need to be careful. Matthew 7:2, judge not. You know, we don't like to, we tend to say, oh, but we make righteous judgment. That is true, we make righteous judgment. But with what, the way that you judge, you yourself will be judged. You need to be very careful. James 2:12-13 also talks about judgment, but being merciful in our judgment. So be careful in the way that you look at other people's children. Don't be waiting for them to do something wrong. Be an encouragement to them. Be helpful to them. Look for the good in them and uplift them. Imagine what life would be like if we all lived Romans 12. And you can turn and look at that if you want, but let your love be genuine one for another. Love one another with brotherly affection. Bless those that persecute you. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And I love that. Because when everyone's children do something great, I want to rejoice with her. And if something sad happens, I want to weep with her. And I want you to weep with me when I'm sad and rejoice with me when something good happens to me. I don't want to feel like, it's not fair for anyone to feel like you're two-faced and saying, I'm happy for you now, but then as soon as you turn around, you're saying, well, next week there'll be something you shouldn't do. So be careful about that. Parenting is not a shot in the dark. Our children are arrows. Psalm 127:4-5 talks about that our children are arrows. And when you think about that, what are you aiming at? You're aiming at a target. And what is your target? Your target needs to be God. Take careful aim. And think about how, I don't know if any of y'all were like this, but when I wanted to have a baby, I decided I'd have a baby. I didn't think about, well, I did, but I didn't think as much about it being a child with a soul. And I think about Audrey and Troy and Ella and Carson, little ones. They're not just babies, and I'm sorry, Carson's not a baby anymore. Audrey's not a baby, but they're not just babies. They're children with a soul, and we need to see them as children with a soul and walk carefully. Ephesians 5:15 talks about walking carefully, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Think about that. I have seen it. It seems so cliche. All of you who have grown children know how fast the time flies, and we say that, you know, it's easy when you say, but I truly do understand how you turn around, and one day they're little, and the next day they're grown. So walk carefully. I'm hoping in the little time we have left to give you some practical tips, things that may have worked for me or some other people that that I respect their parenting abilities. We'll go through different stages. Hopefully some of these will apply to you. First one, I want to talk to you girls who are not married before your prince is born. There's lots of you out there, I see. A lot of you unmarried girls. Before you have a prince, maybe you will never have a prince. Maybe you'll just have princesses. But before your prince is born, and your father who is a king, like we were talking about a minute ago, it's so easy to not think about the future, to just fall in love or just to like some boy and not think about what kind of father he might be. You might be thinking about what kind of husband he is, but what kind of a father is he going to be? You need to be choosy. I'm begging you all to be choosy, to be careful, to think about the choice that you're going to make. The most important decision you'll ever make is to become a Christian, but that's an easy decision. That's an easy one. The second most important decision you'll ever make is who you choose for a mate. And that one is very difficult. It's something that you have to do a lot of planning. It involves another person, not just one other person, but a lot of other people. Be very, very careful. Have you ever had an accident of some sort where you fall, you break a bone, you cut yourself, something happens and you hurt yourself and you wish you could go back 5 minutes in time and you wouldn't get on that bicycle or you wouldn't do this, whatever it was that caused you to get hurt. And think about this with regards to your mate, how so many, and I know some of you in this room know someone or are someone that wishes you could go back and make a different choice. And you can't. So be careful. Be choosy before he comes along. I wanted to ask for a little participation here. What are some red flags from those of you who are married? What are some red flags to look for in a young man? How they treat their mother. Leah?
Not
not think that you can change him. Uh-huh. If it's somebody that needs to be changed, that's a definite red flag. Any others? Possessiveness. Mm-hmm. Temperament. Okay. If he doesn't put God first now, how will he later? Is some one of you here? Have another? Anyone else? Integrity. Does he not have integrity now? Mm-hmm. Can he apologize? Does he say he's sorry when he does something wrong? Heaven, did you have something? Did I miss you? Is he someone that just loves adrenaline highs and wants to go have fun? You know, someone that's just wanting to have fun. That's a red flag. If he doesn't respect authority, that's a red flag. If he's unkind to his mother, to his father, to small animals, these are all red flags you need to be very careful about. Don't marry someone like this. Don't get involved with someone like this. Don't like someone like this. Be careful. Choose someone. I have to say that I really do truly believe that your son's father will be the most important factor to successful parenting. John loves his boys. He always wanted to be with them. He always took them with him when he went for a meeting. He would take one of them with him. He has them working alongside of him. I just have no doubt that my personal opinion is that John is the greatest factor for my boys being good kids because of how he treats them with respect. So please, girls, I want you to be so choosy in how you look for a man. C.H. Spurgeon noted that friendship is one of the sweetest joys of life. Many might have failed beneath the bitterness of their trial had they not found a friend. Friendship is sweet indeed, and there's nothing sweeter than the friendship of a father and a son. That really stood out to me because I have seen that in how that John is a friend. Not just a friend, he's a father, but he is a friend to his sons, and that made a big impression on me. This book that came out of this book is called Kingly by Steve Farrar. He's denominational, so you'll find error in here, but there's so many good things in here. It's written for men, but I read it, and it's lots of dog ears and notes in there. I would recommend that if you're wanting something to read about boys. Something else you need to do before your prince is born is to pray for your own wisdom. James 1, verses 5 and 6. And also think about the fact that you may not be able to physically have children. Sometimes we take for granted. We say, when I have children, and it may not happen. So think about that. Pray about that. And be prepared for the possibility that that might happen. Now, when you're a baby and a toddler, most important thing you can do is to love your little boy. Love him. Sometimes they're not very lovable. Sometimes I'm not very lovable either. But when their little faces turn red and they're screaming at the top of their lungs, we still need to love our little boys. Think about how a mother is your little boy's first glimpse of God. This is where his sense of security comes from. This is where his sense of love and where he knows that no matter what he does, he will be loved by his mother. Take your little boy to worship. As early as you can, take him to worship, take him to Bible class. There's so many good things that come from the wisdom of older people when you see these aged people, the wrinkles on their face are so able to impart wisdom to your little boy. And I think about Betty O'Bannon with my two oldest ones teaching that little Bible class back there. I learned so much from her. You know, here they are in a car seat or not even sitting up by themselves, and she has the little animals and she's saying, here's the daddy horse and the mama horse. So she's teaching them about a family. And I remember that she would pull out the little Bibles and she'd tell them to tap the Bible. And so many things. I don't know if you've taught many children through the years, but that was something that I remember when my boys were tiny babies and we would bring them to worship in Bible class. They're learning even at that age. They need to have their own Bible when they come to worship. They need to learn to respect the Bible and to be responsible to bring it with them. When they're a baby, a toddler, this is when discipline begins. It's a little hard to think about a little innocent baby. And they are innocent, but this is where they need to start, you know, feeling your little taps. And I'll never forget Gordon in his walker. Back when those things were legal, I think they're illegal nowadays because you can't do anything anymore. But he would toddle over to a little bookshelf we had and had a cookie jar. And he wanted to touch it. And I would just I didn't abuse him, I promise. But I would clap his hand and tell him no. And so he would back away from it. And then, you know, he'd wander over there again and start touching it, I'd clap his hand. Well, it wasn't too long after that he would kind of go over there and he'd see me coming and his little eyes would go. So he was expecting me to pop him, and that hurt my heart because I didn't want him to, you know, flinch when he saw me coming. No mother wants that. But that was an indication that he knew. I know I'm not supposed to touch this, but I guarantee you, if you're consistent, when that little boy is a baby and a toddler with your discipline, consistent when it's exhausting, consistent when all you want to do is just let him do it now, and then you won't have to worry so much about it later. I promise, those of you who are struggling with little babies right now, do it now and make sure it's appropriate. When he's a baby, praise him. Little boys need our praise. They need to know when they're doing good things. And one of the most important things that you can do when they're a baby toddler is to love his daddy. And don't neglect that relationship. When you have a little baby, it's easy because you're exhausted. You've been touched and held and talked to and all day long, slobbered all over. And it's easy to just say, don't talk to me, don't touch me. But don't neglect the relationship with your husband because he's going to be around when those babies are gone, aren't they? Now there was a boy. There was a little boy again. Love your little boy and praise your little boy. He needs that. The most important thing you can do is love him. Another thing that you need to do is pray with him. So many times we tend to shy away from that because women don't pray. Women do pray. Our little boys need to see us pray. When his dad's around, his dad will pray. He needs to pray too, but little boys need to know that their moms talk to God and that their moms want to communicate with God. So talk to God with your little boy. Another important thing that you need to do, I believe, is to role play. There's things that they don't understand how to do, and how will they unless you teach them? For example, how to meet someone who's older. You know, we expect them to shake someone's hand. Do they just come out of the womb shaking a hand and saying, hi, my name is Jacob? They don't do that. So when you're at home, you get to say, okay, we're gonna pretend to meet someone. And you teach them to stand still and to look you in the eye and to offer a handshake and say, hi, my name's Audrey. Teach them how to do that. When they're a little bitty, teach them how. And then those people will be impressed when they see how your child is able to greet and be polite and treat an older person with respect. Another thing you can do with role play is teach them to read scripture at home. It's easier to do that at home in front of mom and dad than up here in an intimidating place. But if you do it at home, they'll learn how to do it better in worship services. Teach them respect at this age. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, sir. No, ma'am. And it will follow throughout their life. Tickled yesterday, Rebecca DeLong, some of you know Larry and Kelly, their daughter Rebecca is living in Dripping Springs now, and she's graduating from college. She actually has an interview at school this coming week, and she was sitting between Tammy Hyde and Angela Smith, and she called them Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Hyde, even though both of them had begged her to call them Angela and Tammy. But because her parents had drilled respect into her, she still calls them yes ma'am, there's no ma'am, Mrs. Smith. So I think that those things that we teach them early on in life follow them through. And it never a good idea to not show respect? It's never a good idea to not show respect. Respect is always a good thing. You can never go wrong by showing respect. So teach them respect when they're a little boy. Something that was good to me is putting a stop to pouting, whining, kitty parties, drama. None of that works with me. Works a little bit better with John, so they know to go to John when they want to wheedle something. But I have always felt like pouting is an automatic no. If you're going to pout, no, you're not going to get what you're pouting for. So think about it, how you're going to handle that. But this is the time when they're a little boy, put a stop to the drama, put a stop to the pouting, put a stop to little personal pity parties and whining. It's never a good thing. And most important, love his daddy. When he's a little boy, love his daddy. When he's a preteen, love your boy. Not little anymore. He's little for you, but he doesn't want to be considered little. Love your boy. Praise him. Praise him so much more than you correct him. They need that praise. they need a home that's a happy place, that they're praised and where they're told that they can do good things and that they're good people. They need that to be bolstered underneath them. When he's preaching, it's a good time for him to learn how to apologize. This is something that I heard. My mom's not here. She'll listen to the tape. Mom, sorry. But she told me one time that you should never, I think her opinion has changed about this, but when she was raising Doug and I, she believed you should never let your children know you doubt whether or not what you're doing is the right thing. But as I began raising children, I kind of had to disagree with that a little bit. I think they need to know that we're not always right about everything. But how do we deal with that? We need to tell them, I'm sorry, I did not do this right. I did not handle this right. This is what I should have done differently. They do, don't misunderstand me. They do need to know that we are in charge, that we are the parent, that, you know, just because I'm saying I didn't handle that right does not remove any authority from me. But how are they going to learn to say, I'm sorry? And how, okay, like, how important is that to you with your husband? Do you need to hear that sometimes? I'm sorry? Do you need to say it sometimes? We all need to say it sometimes. But if we don't learn it when we're a child, where are we going to learn it? I've seen this happen. It's difficult. You know, the Fonzie can't say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Remember that episode? Some of you may be too young for that. Yeah, I can see the ones of you who are old enough to remember the Fonz saying, I was real wrong. Remember that? Okay. This is when he needs to know how to apologize. Teach him how. Admit when you're wrong. It can be simple little things. You don't have, sometimes you might not want to write him a note and say, I'm sorry. So this happened the other day. Mike and I were in the car and, I don't even remember what happened, but I popped him. I did like this. I wasn't mad at him. It was a joke. I popped him. But it insulted him. And I could see that he didn't like it. And so he was stone-faced for 30 minutes or so, and I kept thinking, did he take me seriously? Because we play around and joke around all the time, and whenever any of them do something that I don't like, I pop the back of their head. I do it gently. Some of them may see me do it. I promise I'm not abusing my children. But he did not like it. He did not appreciate it. So I said, Micah, I'm sorry. I really did not mean to hit you like that. It just, your face was closer to my hand than I thought it was, and I had to apologize to him because it offended his, it just hurt his feelings. And I shouldn't have done that. So teach your children by showing them how to apologize. His wife will thank you later, I'm sure. When you're preaching, you need to reinforce priorities, whether it's worship. You know, football games on Wednesday night happen in middle school regularly. But worship is more important. God is more important when we're traveling. Sometimes you'll be in the middle of nowhere and there's no way that you can attend. But if you can plan it, plan to attend worship service somewhere when you're traveling. Just show them by what you do that your priorities mean that you're putting God first. At this age, preteen, you need to really be building your relationship with Him. But there's sometimes doing things that you don't enjoy doing, digging worms. Never really liked digging worms, but I've done it. I have, we call them mommy days. I would take them out of school. Not real often, you know, once every couple of months maybe. He's my child. He does not belong to the state. I can do what I want to, and I'm going to tell you, I have never had a problem with that. I have never had anyone at the school that has given me any trouble about that. I don't lie about what I'm doing. I just take him out of school because he's mine, and I need to spend some time with him. But we'll just go and have lunch and maybe just go find a pair of tennis shoes, just talk, just move days by ourselves. No one else. Daddy can have a daddy day if he wants to. Usually that involves building a fence, and they don't enjoy those as much as they do mommy days. But, you know, build blanket forts. Do fun things. Just make memories and bond and build your relationship when he's a young man, and it makes it so much easier the older he gets to maintain that relationship. Another thing at this age, and I know I'm racing through these, and I'll have a handout for you, too, at the end. So important to help him love the church and see the joy that comes from being part of the Lord's church. If you go home on Sunday morning and you have roast song leader for lunch or fried preacher, although most of you probably your husbands are the preacher, That wouldn't be good. But this happened before, yeah. You've got to help him love the church, because the attitude that you have toward the church is like the attitude that he's going to grow toward the church. So help him see the joy and help him love the church and being part of God's kingdom. This is the time that you need to open the door to talking about girls. And not in an embarrassing way. Use common sense. Be wise about this. Don't tease him about girls. Don't make it hard for him. But just be matter of fact. And, you know, let him be the one to give you a sense of how much talking he wants to do about girls. Most likely at this age you're going to get not so nice response regarding girls. But it's coming, so now is the time to put that little foot in the door and be able to talk to them about it. Be matter of fact that, and this is also the time you need to discuss with your husband how you're going to handle this coming up. You need to have a plan, believe it or not. In a preteens, you need to have a plan. So you're not going to, this is, you either decide that courting, dating, groups. Think about it. Talk about it when he's young so that it doesn't catch you off guard when it comes around, because it's just happening earlier and earlier these days, and if you want to put a stop to it, good luck. But have a plan ahead of time. Another super important thing is to be super cautious about his friends, who he hangs out with. I really can't stress this enough, because if you let him go to a little boy's house whose parents have been drinking and they take off in the car somewhere, there's no telling what can happen. Or just being there around alcohol. We take for granted. Our children are not around it, but they go somewhere where it's openly used. It just opens up a door that you don't want to open. So be very careful, choosy. Know the parents. Don't let them go sleep over somewhere that you don't feel completely comfortable with. Just don't do it. It gets a little uncomfortable when they want to, and when the other parents don't understand why, it doesn't matter. This is your child. It is not something to play with. It is not something that you have to worry about with other parents' feelings as opposed to worried about your son's future. Be super careful about that. And as with every other age, love his daddy. When he's a preteen, love his daddy. He's going to want to have this kind of relationship that you have with your husband when he grows up. He sees you having a good relationship. When he's a teenager, love him. This is harder and harder because hormones. But hello, I'm a little unlovable when my hormones are acting up. So I can't claim innocence on that. When those hormones hit, it's a little harder to show that love because maybe they don't want you to show it. I've never really experienced this. I have to say, I don't really understand teenagers who are so moody that their parents cannot communicate with them, because I guess going back to that, not allowing the pouting and the whining and the drama, if you take care of that early, you're not going to have it later. But I know that it's a reality. Those hormones do affect how they feel and how they act, and so we've got to love them regardless of how they act. Something that I think is very, very important as they're teenagers is to teach and show by your example how to judge others in a kind and gentle and merciful way. Ephesians 4, verses 31 and 32, Colossians 3, 12 and 13. Let's turn over and read that. Colossians 2, verses 12 and 13. Okay, that's not what I had intended. Let's just read Ephesians 4, 31 and 32. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. In our dealings with other people, let's show this, being kind, being tender-hearted, loving and forgiving. Teach and show an example, model those things to your son so that he will be kind and not so harsh in his judgments and opinions of others. It's hard to be around someone who's super critical of everyone else. But if we show and model how to be, I'm not saying excuse error, not saying that at all, but to be kind in the way that you handle and treat others who you may disagree with. Another thing when he was a teenager, continue to maintain your relationship. And a good way is by sharing books and movies. I gave Jacob a copy of a book called Redeeming Love. Some of you may have read that. I didn't think he would read it just because it's, and he likes to read, but it's kind of a girl book. Great book, by the way, Francine Rivers. It's a novelized story of the book of Hosea, but I just gave it to him because I thought he might be interested in it. He devoured it over the course of a weekend. But it gave us something to talk about. It gave us something to bond over. Micah likes Jordan likes the Chronicles of Narnia. We read those not together. We didn't sit down and read them together, but I read them. He read them. And we talked about them. Things like that you can share. They give you common experiences, common things to talk about. Movies. If you sit down and watch Star Wars with you, maybe we'll sit down and watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with you. Something like that. Share those things. Don't be opposed to doing things that he likes to do. Think about what he might like to, how he might like to build your relationship. There's a book called Raven Cole, and it's about a UT football player 15 years ago or so who fell asleep on his way home and was killed in a car accident. And his dad wrote this book as a tribute to him. But it's a very touching book. One of the things that his dad talked about was that they would play a game called Dead Man Talking. And what it was is that your son is allowed to talk to you, say anything to you, question you, tell you something, and you have to pretend to be a dead man. Meaning you cannot respond, you cannot show any emotion, and it's a way that he has to tell you something that he's been dreading to tell you. Now, later on, you can deal with the fallout. And we've never had an experience with, you know, something coming out that was a hard thing. But we would do that. You know, you can tell me anything. You can ask me anything. You can share your doubts with me. You can share your fears with me. And I'm not going to blow up. I'm not going to react in a negative way. So think about that. You might want to tweak it a little bit or don't do it at all, but it's something to think about. They need a way to communicate with you that is not threatening when they're teenagers. The very, very important thing to do is to look for a mentor. Jordan had Troy Spradlin. I don't know how many of you know Troy. I don't think Troy even knew he was a mentor for Jordan, but they like fish and hunt and talk about guy things. And I don't know if Jordan saw Troy as a mentor, but it worked out that way. And they continue to be friends. Troy was quite a bit older than Jordan, but it didn't matter because they had those things in common. Jordan admired him. He was a good, solid Christian man. I was so thankful for Troy because there were things that he could tell him that he didn't necessarily want to tell us. Same thing for Jacob. Jacob has Corey Myers. Corey doesn't probably even know because he has a humble personality, but I'm so, so thankful that my two older boys had those two men. And Micah has Jordan and Jacob. So look for a mentor. They need that. They need someone that they like to be with, that's a good, solid Christian man. Look for a mentor. Don't be bashful about talking about his sexual purity. If you're going to be afraid to talk about things, you know, Dad may be the one that actually has to talk about the facts of life, and I've always been relieved that that was John's job. But I've always talked to the boys. Pretty frankly, I've always said, look, when you come home, from going out the night before, I'm going to ask you, did you remain here last night? I'm just going to point blank ask you. Hold them accountable. Don't be bashful in talking with them. Proverbs 7, verses 6 through 27 has a very sobering account of a harlot, basically, and how he's warning his son, look, I'm seeing this woman out here dressed in a harlot's attire. She's trying to entice you in. Here's the things that she does. Listen to me. Don't listen to her. Read that with your son. And see how that she caused him to yield. The fact that the Bible says, she caused him to yield. I want that to be my son. Talk to your son about these things. Someone else will if you don't. Someone else will when you don't. So talk to him about it. Don't be naive about his relationships. We can say all day long, you're not going to have a girlfriend. But there may be something going on out there. Good kid, bad kid, a kid. You can say, you can think that nothing's happening, but don't be naive about it. Maybe nothing is happening, but be aware of it. Have a trusted friend that you go to and say, Angela, if you know something is going on with my son, would you please tell me? I give you permission to tell me. That way, when she hears something, she's not afraid to come to you. Because sometimes we get a little bit touchy about our kids, don't we? And we don't want to hear bad things about him. But if someone has permission to talk to you about it, that's a good thing. Sometimes you might have to make unpopular decisions when it comes to your kids. We've had to do that. Made other parents mad at us. Made other kids mad at us. But we had to do what we knew was right. We had to do it for the sake of our children. Because we knew what was best for them. We may not have handled everything just right, but we had to make some unpopular decisions. And years later, looking back on it, both of our older two have thanked us for things that they were mad at us about before. You know, the movies like to glamorize these teenage relationships, and trying to explain this to John, he didn't get it. But you are women, y'all will. These movies that have star-crossed lovers, you know, bad boy meets good girl. Daddy says, you will not see bad boy. Girl says, I will see him anyway. And then bad boy turns into good boy. That doesn't happen a whole lot, really. You know, parents are dumb, parents are stupid, they don't know what they're talking about. Well, that's not true. Parents do know what they're talking about. And we need to have that open communication, have that relationship with our sons, that we can even communicate with them when they're mad at us. That's very important, to let to know that they will still communicate with you when they disagree with something you've done. So know that you're going to have to make some unpopular decisions, but do it anyway. Just a couple minutes left when they're preparing to leave home, you still need to love them. And this is where I am right now with my two older ones, and it's hard. I never really knew how hard it would be. It's a changing relationship. This is something I wasn't prepared for. I thought we would always have the same relationship, but it's very different now. I respect my sons. I don't automatically feel like they have to look to me for the authority and respect. I respect them. It's a change in relationship. I still love them just as much as I did, but I have to have a different approach to them. Prepare your heart for this because it's difficult. We have spent 20-some-odd years pouring our heart and soul and lives into this little boy, and he's leaving. And I'm supposed to turn that off? That doesn't happen. You have to ask for God's help, ask for wisdom and how to deal with this. Put yourself in his shoes. He wants you to be happy for him. And that's hard. We want to stay here with me. Those open strings are stretching. We have to be willing to cut them and let them go and be happy for them. Think about Paul and Timothy in 1 Timothy 7, verses 20 and 21. Paul says, O Timothy, guard what was committed to your trust, avoiding the profane and idle babblings and contradictions of what is falsely called knowledge. By professing it, some have strayed concerning the faith. 1 Timothy 6, 20, 21. Think about the relationship that they shared was like a father-son relationship. And he's saying, guard what you've been taught. And this is what we tell our boys. Remember what you've been taught. Don't be led astray by those people out there that want to tell you something that's wrong, that want to discuss and argue and be philosophical and logical. Remember what you've been taught. Go to the Bible. This is what we've got to stress to them when they're preparing to leave home. In 3 John verses 3 and 4, there's no greater joy than to know that your child walks in truth and to hear others say that they're walking in truth. There is no greater joy. And at this stage, last thing, love is daddy, because now it's the two of you again. You may have other children at home, but I'm seeing. It's just going to be the two of us, and I'm kind of looking forward to that. It sounds like fun again. Now, if real quick, if he doesn't turn out to be a wonderful prince, and he turns out to be a not-so-great prince, and there are bad princes, just happened to catch the tail end of Matt Lauer interviewing Ryan O'Neill. Those of you who are older will know Ryan O'Neill. And Farrah Fawcett was, I don't know if they were married, but they had kids between them. Drug addicts, in jail. In fact, one of them, in shackles, had to go see his mom on her deathbed. Sad. Awful, sad situation. And Matt Lauer said, it sounds to me like you were a bad father. And Ryan O'Neill just hung his head and he says, I was. So I think I was. And I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want that to happen to any of you. Don't be caught up in yourself. Focus on raising, rearing your children, using what tool that God has given you here. Be a good parent. But if something happens and you're not perfect, which they're not going to be, forgive yourself. God is the perfect Father. We are His children. Do we always make the right choices? We don't always make the right choices. Our children are not always going to make the right choices. So be ready and eager to forgive him when he returns. And then I just wanted to real quick read this. Y'all, those of you here might as well appreciate this. It's a sign you can put on your bathroom door. It says, the bathroom door is closed. Please do not stand here and talk, whine, or ask questions. Wait until I get out. Yes, it is locked. I want it that way. It is not broken, and I am not trapped. I know I have left it unlocked, and even open at times since you were born, because I was afraid some horrible tragedy might occur while I was in there, but it's been 10 years, and I want some privacy. Do not ask me how long I will be. I will come out when I am done. Do not bring the phone to the bathroom door. Do not go running back to the phone yelling, she's in the bathroom. Do not begin to fight as soon as I go in. Do not stick your little fingers under the door and wiggle them. This was funny when you were two. Do not slide pens, Legos, or notes under the door, even when you were two. This got a little tiresome. If you are following me down the hall talking and are still talking, if you face this closed door, please turn around, walk away, and wait for me in another room. I will be glad to listen to you when I'm done. And yes, I still love you. Mom. Thank you for your attention. I have handouts for you just in no particular order of suggestions.